Money and markets. We have now finished the second quarter, so we know what the first half of the year is. And I just want to recap what's happened in the financial markets because it's been a very interesting time. We see the stock market continue to be relatively strong, not as strong as last year, but we're up. We closed June 30 with the S&P up 6.1%, the Dow up 1.5%, the Russell 2000 up 3.3%. That means they came back a lot. By far the best performance in June was the small caps up 5.3% on the Russell, with the S&P only up 1.9, Dow only up 0.7. For the quarter, though, the S&P was stronger because the small caps had given up so much in the spring. We see the G7, or sort of the developed markets, up about 1.9%. That's the EAFE. Emerging markets started to perk up 5.4% for the second quarter, 3.4% of the year. I'm not convinced we've seen a turn yet, as we talked about in the last equity report with Chuck Gibson. So, you know, big question mark in my mind is, will the emerging markets pick up? The divergence in values between the emerging markets and the developed markets is so great that there's tremendous opportunity that is of great interest to me. But I still think it's early, and some of it depends on how the dollar fares. The bond market continued to be okay. It wasn't as strong as it was in the first quarter, but year to date, we see the U.S. aggregate bond index up 3.2%, high yield up 3.9%. A lot of people chasing yields, and that's been good for high yield. And it's, you look at the risk and you kind of go, oh. Gold had a good first half, up 10%, silver up 7.8%. Again, I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, I think it's a little bit too early, same as the emerging markets. There's a lot of different signs saying inflation is revving up. But we've thought that before and then sort of gotten whacked back. So this summer is traditionally a tough time for precious metals. And, of course, equities sell in May and go away. And the one time we know is traditionally is not good for equities is the second term of a presidential cycle, mid-year elections. And yet the markets continue to be strong. One of the reasons, as I described earlier this or last month, we saw think tank OMFIF come out with a global survey of central banks, sovereign wealth funds, and public pension funds. So all governmental controlled assets, public institutions now own $29.1 trillion of $130 trillion in cross-border assets, and reports, many reports of, you know, increasing ownership and purchasing of equities by central banks. The largest state-controlled investor now in equities is the Chinese central bank. The Swiss National Bank, certainly a leader in sort of trends, reports holding 15% of its foreign exchange assets in shares. So I assure you, if the state-controlled funds, which are mammoth, take a position that they're going to shift into the equity markets can continue strong for some time. I was in the process of researching that. I went back and looked at a McKinsey study from 2010, and it mentioned as the shift in global economic activity shifts into the emerging markets, since those investors don't buy equities, it could be a tough time for equities. But what we're seeing is the emerging market central banks, sovereign wealth funds buy equities. That's offsetting. It will be interesting to see if the emerging market, as the middle class grows, if they come in. Chuck and I have talked about that on the equity report. And if that happens, we, you know, these people who get up and say the Dow could go to 30,000, you know, that's true. I've talked before about the possibility of a crash up. The thing that's nervous about looking at these kinds of things are the fact that when you have this much capital from state-controlled entities, if somebody blows a whistle and they pull out, you can see enormous drops. If they say get in, you can get it swing up. So it doesn't take but, you know, the G20 making a decision to swing the markets one way or another by a significant amount. Another thing to note about stock market capitalization, and I noted this in one of the newsletters I was writing this week, we see tremendous differences in how much of a domestic economy has been reflected in the stock market, how much has been securitized as well as valuations. And I noted And you saw this from the think tank study. While Switzerland and the United States, actually it was an article in Guru Focus, which I had posted on the blog. While Switzerland and the United States stock markets are valued at 287% and 123% respectively of their domestic GDP, China and Brazil's markets are valued at 40 and 44%. It's another reason, again, why the divergence in the emerging markets has me so keen, because when that turns, it's got a long way up. In theory, it could go. So I continue to watch and wait to see if we get a big shift. So that's it. And I will say that the financial markets continue to surprise, both the strength of equities, the strength of bonds, and it's one of the reasons I was so glad we did the Secret Space Conference, because it is exceptionally important to understand that one of the things fueling this economy is that we have enormous amounts of advanced technology. How much of it comes out of the black budget and gets integrated into the economy, we don't know. But as it does, it can really fuel strength in the markets and strength in the people and the areas that basically are about that business. It's one of the things Bonnie and I talk about as we recap the conference on the interview. I put up a post on a history since the 1500s of the Netherlands 10-year government bond yields, just to show you how unprecedented the current drop in yields are. You know, I feel like we're in a limbo dance. How low can you go? And it just keeps getting lower. Another article worth noting on the blog, 2014 is on track to be the second biggest year in the history of M&A. Last year, corporations bought shares with their stock. Now they're buying each other. And again, it's very frustrating, because a lot of this quantitative easing and debasement is turning into corporate cash, but it's not getting reinvested back in the economy anywhere near as much as I would love to see it do. But instead, we're having a consolidation of control in that sector. Interesting little blog post from Chuck Gibson up on the blog this week, Tan Past the Sunscreen, referring to the solar ETF. Many times in the last 10 years, various people have hoped that renewable energy would start to go someplace, both in the marketplace and in the stock market. And we're finally beginning to see, I think, a much more broad-based interest in different kinds of renewables. Part of it is improvement in the batteries and the technology. But as I've talked about before, I think solar is getting closer and closer. And so Chuck notes the performance of the solar ETF and what that may mean. I just posted a commentary on income inequality. Steve Roach, if you haven't listened to our interview with him, that is, that is his work, and his latest book, Unbalanced, is fantastic. We're coming into the election, and income inequality is a topic that's on everybody's mind. We're seeing more misinformation and disinformation than you can shake a stick at about it. It's good to remember that the global rebalance is because the discrepancies between rich and poor globally are mind-boggling, much greater than they are in the United States. And we're watching a tension between the United States doing what it has to do to keep the dollar high and to keep the subsidies flowing to the American people, to keep them from, to basically fund, among other things, the social safety net. At the same time, so there are tensions in the elections and here because people want more money, and then there are tensions globally with what the leadership has to do to go out and get that money, not to say that's the only thing they're going out and getting money for. And at the heart of this process, and I believe primary source of inequality, is black budget and how that technology and the benefits of the black budget are being siphoned and used. And that's why one of the reasons I think it's so important that we look at what's going on with the black budget and what's going on with the investment of those monies and bring transparency, among other things, to it. Because I don't think you can grapple with the issues of rebalancing. To me, one of the things that has to happen if we're going to rebalance globally is we've got to re-engineer by place, county by county, how the government credit appropriations, contracts, and regulations work. There's tremendous opportunity. The challenge is, how do you re-engineer the overt part of that money without re-engineering the black budget simultaneously. And if we're all sitting around pretending that that stuff is really not going on and happening, you're stuck. And if you read my article, Coming Clean Over the Fiscal Cliff, I think that's the primary reason why we're stuck. And what I'm grappling with is how do we get unstuck? And that's one of the reasons I want to keep bringing up these topics. I think we have to talk about the black budget because we've got to find a way to re-engineer together. It's hard to do that. It's like dancing with somebody when you're trying to pretend they don't exist. The part of these rebalancing issues, of course, is what's going on with China and Russia. We see lots of dancing in and around Europe and whether Europe's going to get closer to Russia and China or closer to the United States. U.S. imposed a record fine on BNP and Putin announced, okay, well, that's a slapback because they didn't cancel the warship contract with Russia. Russia and China announces a joint space program and you know, so the politics of Eurasia just continue to dance, and that's part of the geopolitical tensions over the discrepancies in wealth between rich and poor. There's been another disclosure on Facebook. It wouldn't surprise me if that's designed to distract from the fact that the government is trying to stop Glenn Greenwald from publishing his latest and his latest or so what he says is the big Snowden revelation. Others claim that they're going to release all of the Snowden documents. Meantime, nobody is paying any attention to that, doesn't even know about it. They're too busy watching Facebook try to apologize for its next outrage. Watching Sheryl Sandberg play the bimbo, oh, you know, we're so sorry we mishandled it, is another reason why I wrote the Promoting Women series. The idea is you do psychopathic things and then you put this attractive woman who uses the sort of women's lib card, you know, to kind of make it all sort of nice. And frankly, I think they should all just be, you know, I just want to say on behalf of the women in the world to the men of the world, please feel free to not be restricted by political correct. You know, she should be held accountable for the kind of psychopathy she's doing and, you know, trying to make what they're doing, socially acceptable is, it's even, you know, God bless Mark Zuckerberg. At least he gets up there and says, oh, well, you know, if you're stupid enough to use you, we're stupid enough to trick you and steal your stuff. You know, so there's something Cheney, you know, it's the honesty of a Dick Cheney, which I prefer to someone like Sandberg.